Hello, and welcome to episode 159 of SMART, which as we all know stands for...
Superb Mira Ascends Remarkably to Supremacy.
Ooh.
Ooh.
That's giving away your comic of the week.
Yes, it is. But so, finish the intro.
My name is Rudiger Q Podcaster,
hello,
aka Trevor, and your name is...
Julia Guglia of Internet Fame, dash Podcaster.
Indeed.
Yes.
So there's not much news this week. We're in the doldrums of summer.
Yeah, unlike last week, that was like all news.
Well, that was Comic-Con. So not only are we in the doldrums of summer, we're also in the post-Comic-Con refractory period where there's no...
Where everybody's just in their hotels
everybody's
going...
recovering.
Panting.
The only thing is the announcement from Disney and Lucasfilm about the start of shooting of Star Wars Episode 9. And with that came the official casting announcement. So... pretty much everybody that was in The Last Jedi is returning, all the major characters you would expect. A couple of surprises and are interesting factoids in there. So Mark Hamill will be returning.
Yep, that's been confirmed. Hooray.
So we can expect some
Force Ghost action
in there.
Yep.
Billy Dee Williams will be back as Lando, which
that's
is nice.
Cool.
Be nice to see him one more time. I mean, he's still very much in the family because he's voiced Lando in a couple of cartoons and other things in the past few years.
Didn't he do something for him for Star Wars Rebels?
He was on a couple of episodes of Rebels. He was also on a couple of episodes of that Lego Star Wars The Freemaker Adventures thing, which exists. But then interestingly, they also said that Carrie Fisher will be part of the cast, but the compromise they struck between storytelling and, I know
having
what
her presence
it,
there.
Respect, is that they will utilize, I mean, it's good that, and this is another way in which it's good that J.J. Abrams is coming back because, he's going to utilize footage that he shot for The Force Awakens that has her in it. And I guess maybe like key out the background and put in like a different background or something.
Maybe,
cause I mean, that planet got blown up by the First Order. So, or at least the rebel base on, can't remember the name of the planet, the rebel base, the resistance base was on The Force Awakens. But that got destroyed by the First Order. So all of her scenes there, they couldn't just use wholesale.
Whole club,
they'll have to, you know, put in a different background
somehow,
or something. But they're going to use footage he shot from that. It would have been weird if it was a different director using footage that another guy had shot for another movie. I mean, they would still do it. I mean, the Lucasfilm owns all the footage, but it's a bit nicer that J.J. Abrams is able to use scenes that he shot with his friend Carrie Fisher for the final movie that she'll appear in. You know, it's got a nice sentimental, you know,
cyclical symmetry
thing
to it.
Yeah. And this is obviously much better than. Obviously, the thing that they would never do is just wholesale recast. It's like, oh, now, you know, whoever is going to be Princess Leia for this one movie for one scene. Or, you know, doing the Rogue One thing where they make it CG and use old dialogue of hers or a sound-alike actor to replace her. Or they just, like, have a body double and shoot her from behind and then she doesn't have any lines. Or just having her die. I mean, because we assume she's going to die, although I guess if they're... I mean, obviously they didn't shoot a scene in The Force Awakens where she died.
Right.
So she's either still going to need to have, like, an off-screen death.
Mm-hmm.
Or the scenes that they're reusing from The Force Awakens will talk about her going to complete some mission somewhere or something, and then she's just not in the rest of the movie. But that would seem like a, you know,
that
it seems like you have to have her die, and it would have to be off screen. I mean, obviously they could supplement it with like with judicious use of a body double scene from behind or something, you know? So they could have the scene and they could have an actress of her roughly the same stature and build and the same costume walking down a hall and then the hall explodes or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, and I think that would still be seen as respectful. That's not like recasting her or doing something weird like that.
Right.
I mean, the movies use body doubles and stand-ins and stuff like that for stuff all the time, even when the actors are there working on the movie and still alive.
Yep.
So that wouldn't be a bridge too far, I think, if they were to do something like that. But anyway, it's interesting that she'll be in there. It seems right that she's in there. Would have just been weird if the movie opened with like her funeral or something and this major character had just died off screen before the movie even started. So I'm glad they're doing that. And also they announced some new cast members, a couple of whom I'm not familiar with, but they did confirm the rumors that Kerry Russell, who obviously has long-time ties to J.J. Abrams going all the way back to Felicity, will appear in the movie in some role. We don't know anything about that yet. It'll be a long time before there's any details about that, I would imagine. And they start shooting this week on Wednesday, I think, and it doesn't come out for a year and a half because, of course, there was a whole thing where they fired the original director this time before they started shooting, which is an improvement over the last two times they fired the original director of one of their movies.
Yep.
And brought J.J. Abrams back, so now they kind of had to start from scratch with a new script and everything. So that's why we're not getting it next summer. We're getting it, you know, why we're not getting it a year after Solo. We're getting it, you know, next Christmas. But yeah, so I mean, this all sounds good. I mean, I haven't seen, really, I think, I wonder if the only thing I've, and it doesn't even count as seeing her, the only thing that I've experienced Carrie Russell in is the that one time she voiced Wonder Woman in an animated movie.
Oh, cool.
But she was good in that.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know, and I know that people generally like Felicity and some of the other stuff. I know that the show that she's in right now, The Americans, is like, people say it. I mean, just
when she was like 15 or 16, she appeared in the first episode of this Fox series called Roar that pretty much debuted Heath Ledger onto the Grandmaster stage too. This was like a Celtic saga, and it only lasted like a season, following the Roman Empire occupation of this druidic environment in Ireland, and how the
Romans. Funny, she doesn't look druish.
Amazing. And she was basically the girlfriend of the main hero and died in the first episode. And I remember her from that. They probably cast her because of her amazing hair. But she was great in that, and she was great in this other movie that I saw her with Nathan Fillion in.
Oh.
Something about pies. She was making about
the waitress. Pies.
Yes, very good, very very.
I was
good.
Gonna say, is that it, or is that, am I conflating it with your movie?
That's awesome.
I think it was called.
No,
the waitress.
It was The Waitress. Yeah. Yeah. And I also saw a good few seasons of Felicity as well. I don't remember her from anything else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a fan of hers. I like
so this is all good news then.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to hearing more about episode 9.
Yep,
so
me
that's
too.
It for our news, just that one bit of news. So now we have our comics of the week. What was your comic of the week?
This week I picked Mira. I don't remember the number, but it was the first, I regard it as like a first part of the two-parter, because this week they put Mira and Aquaman in back-to-back storytelling mechanic. You could read them separately, because Mira goes into a fight with Orm, as was left off as a cliffhanger from last time. They were supposed to fight basically for the crown of Atlantis, and she used old school legality to get herself out of a situation where she would be, beat up and, you know, whatever, done wrong by the Zebel monarchy, who wanted to do her harm. And so she said, all right, if you want me to establish the fact that I have official claim on the Atlantean throne, then I'll have to prove it to you the old school way, and I challenge you to a duel, basically, because Orm had done a little bit of backstabbing and malarchy in terms of diplomacy to try to get himself recognized as the monarch, and she wasn't having it. And this is the issue where that gets resolved, and her magic comes back full force, and it's amazing, and it picks up in Aquaman right after that. And I'm not spoiling Aquaman, because that's not my comic of the week this time, because Mira was a badass in this comic, so that's why I chose it. I
Very
had
good.
A great time reading this comic. I was just like fist pumping the whole time. Yes! Okay, what was your comic of the week?
My comic of the week was Action Comics number 1001, which sounds crazy to say.
It's a palindrome, did you know
this
that?
This is Bendis' first issue on this. Obviously, he did Superman number 1 a few weeks ago and did the Man of Steel miniseries before that. But this is for his first issue on Action Comics, which, contrary to the name, you might think is going to be the title that focuses more on the street-level newsroom antics and, you know, street level crime, and obviously there's going to be superpowers and stuff like that in there, but this isn't going to be where you get follow up on the, you know, how was Krypton destroyed and what happened to Rogal Zar and the Phantom Zone and all that stuff. This is going to be more about, I mean, this picks up the plot thread from the miniseries, where this mysterious series of fires all over Metropolis, and Superman was implicated by this little kid that walked into one of the fire stations, so he's got to follow up on that. Meanwhile, there's still intrigue around the Daily Planet with people wondering where Lois is.
Mm-hmm.
She mysteriously appears at the end, which is crazy, because if that's really her and she's back, why is she writing an expose about Superman and his secrets, and why hasn't she told him that she's back, and where's their son, and all this other stuff. The art on this was phenomenal. Patrick Gleason, obviously, has been doing Superman stuff with Pete Tomasi for years now, and he's stuck around for this and moved over from Superman to Action. But his stuff is great here. It almost seems like it kicked up a whole nother notch. But I love the way that Superman's portrayed in this issue, where he's kind of like everybody's stern but loving dad.
Yeah.
where he never raises his voice, he never gets angry. Like, there's an overuse of the whole, like, oh, Superman's really mad now, like his eyes are glowing red with the heat vision, like he's about to incinerate you or something. Here he's just, you know, he's his posture, like his body language is always very calm and welcoming and open and friendly. You know, he'll put his hand on your shoulder, or like if he's floating there, it's just as a way of, you know, striking a certain tone at the beginning of the conversation if he's there to teach you a lesson or whatever.
Yep.
But he's not, he doesn't seem detached or alien or you know, about to fly off the handle or like the...
No, never any
godlike
anger
or anything like that. Like he kind of comes across as everybody's dad in this story, which is kind of the one. Well, there's a bunch of different ways that I enjoy seeing him written, but that's one of them. Like I like his scenes with the kid in this one. His scenes with the deputy fire chief, and his scenes at the Daily Planet where he's Clark, and he's got to put up with the fact that everybody there thinks that his wife left him for Superman, and he's there in like the sweater vest.
He's
and
just
the,
taking the abuse,
and the,
yeah.
You know, oversized suit jacket and, you know, hair slicked back, and like the, it's not like the Christopher Reeve Clark Kent necessarily, but it's like it's a put upon Clark Kent where everybody just thinks that he's a dweeb whose wife left him, and they kind of feel sorry for him, but you know what I mean. So I like the way that it struck the balance in both. And then there's an interesting new thing with this new syndicate, I guess, working in Metropolis, and they find interesting ways of evading Superman, but now there's this mysterious superpower that seems like it's controlling them, or at least enforcing some sort of rules on them as to how they're supposed to operate. And then obviously the mystery of Lois reappearing at the end is a pretty good cliffhanger for the next issue too. So I just really enjoyed it. I mean, if it was just Superman flying around having stern but loving talks with various citizens of Metropolis for 20 pages every month, like I would, if it was written and drawn like this, I would read that every month. I mean, obviously the story is going to ramp up, but
I like the interaction between him and the three masked criminals with machine guns at the very beginning.
Yeah, like he doesn't need to get mad at your average bank robber.
Yeah.
Like, why would he get mad? I mean, he's not mad. He's disappointed, right? Which goes back to like the
so
the,
good. Yes.
The father thing. Like he's disappointed that people choose to spend their lives living a life of crime, but he's not. There'd be no reason why he would hurt these people or get angry at them, because he knows that they can't. They pose no risk to him. So he's just going to stand there and wait until they empty their clips.
Yep.
And then he'll just, you know, he'll tie a street lamp around them or whatever and leave them for the cops and fly off. And he's like, you know, you really should think twice about throwing that at me, because if anything, because it's not going to work. And if anything, you're just going to get more charges filed against you. So why don't you just, well, I'll just stand here and wait for the cops to arrive. And then, you know, I'll put in a good word for you, your sentencing or whatever, if you give up quietly. And, you know, like there'd be no reason for him to do the whole his red glowing eyes, fists clenched
exactly.
Too many people do. Yeah. So I really enjoyed it for that reason.
So good.
So now we have your pop quiz. So this week, because we just finished the series, I'm going to be quizzing you about characters from Star Trek Voyager.
Hooray! Okay.
All right. So number one.
Okay.
What U.S. state, which now I'm rethinking the way I phrased it, because does the U.S. even exist anymore in the 21st century? What modern day U.S. state, one might say? The state still exists, even
Illinois.
If the country doesn't. No, but now that you've said that, it's all I can think of. Which U.S. state was Catherine Janeway born in? It was not Illinois. You want to take one more guess?
Was it Nebraska?
No, it was Indiana.
Indiana. Oh, no. Really? The farm on Indiana, not Illinois. Darn it. Okay.
All right. Number two.
Screw that one up.
What was B'Elanna Torres' mother's name? I'll give you a hint. It's also her daughter's name.
Oh. No, her grandmother for whom she said that prayer was Laurel or something like that. Mother's name starts with a B.
Nope.
I don't know.
Oh, Miral.
Miral?
Yes. Yeah. All right.
I didn't know that her daughter's name was there. She well, just that's called what it her was Lieutenant in
the,
Paris.
That was it was in the... Well, I guess that's true. I think it was in the script for that episode, which you would have no way of knowing, but also they did say that they were, when she had that brief communication with her father after all those years via the Pathfinder array, she did say that they were thinking of naming their daughter after her mother. And so it was kind of implied that that's what they were going to do.
Oh,
and then,
she said a name, but I didn't realize that that was her mother's name.
Well, that's why her father said, "Oh, your mother would have liked that," or something.
Well,
like that,
I just thought it was a nice name. I don't know.
All right,
but all right.
Number three, how long do Ocampans like Kes typically live?
I think you asked me this before. 9 years.
9 years is correct. All right, number four. What is Tom Paris's favorite action-adventure holo program?
Captain Proton.
Correct.
You know, he wrote that one. I didn't realize that.
I'm not
sure. It came out at the end when he was on a kind of a write-off, that episode where he and the doctor were both trying to become published authors.
I recall,
it turned out that he wrote that
one. I recall being
one.
Confused about that because I was always under the impression that that was like
I thought so
one
too.
That he just
that he
inserted
loved.
Himself yeah. in. Like that was just something you could not buy because there's no money in the future.
Right.
But that was something you could just download and insert yourself into.
Yeah.
But I guess he was supposed to have programmed it. I think that was probably a retcon because the way that he and Harry were acting initially made it seem like this was all the rage and they were just playing
right.
through it.
Yeah.
Anyway, number five. What is Neelix's race?
Talaxian.
Correct. Number six. What is the full name of the Doctor's creator?
Oh no! Oh, you got me so good this time, Doctor. I think his. I don't even know. Stephen
Hawking.
So I guess it's not Stephen then. I don't know. Dr. Kevin. No, it's
McGuire.
Not Kevin. Kevin sounds weird. I don't think it's. No, it just doesn't. That's not. It's not a Kevin. Maxwell?
Maxwell Smart. No.
I don't know.
It was Dr. Lewis Zimmerman.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's been too long since I saw
oddly
an
enough,
with him in it.
I think the writer's Bible or something, something that exists, some document that existed early in production that must have gotten seeded to various press outlets or whatever, referred to the doctor as Dr. Zimmerman. I guess the intention being that he would take the name of his creator or something, kind of like Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously they didn't end up doing that on the show, but I remember for I think years, maybe even for the full run of the show, but for years anyway, you would read like the TV guide description of an episode
mm-hmm.
and it would refer to the doctor as Dr. Zimmerman. Like
too funny.
Like nobody that wrote for TV guide had ever actually bothered to watch the show and they were just going by the original character descriptions that had been provided to them by Paramount or
Party
UPN
foul.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
I always remember that because I'm like they kept referring to him as that and I remember being super confused as a kid about why that was until I sort of figured, oh, they must have gotten some early character descriptions and just never bothered to go back and recheck them. All right, number seven. On what ship did Tuvok serve after graduating from Starfleet Academy?
How did that come up? Oh, no.
There was a whole episode about it featuring a very special guest star.
Who is the guest star?
Well, actually, I was going to say if I say that, you'll get it, but that's not necessarily a foregone conclusion. It was George Takei was in that episode.
Oh. The Phoenix?
No, where would you get? I mean, I know what that is, but why would you say that?
I don't know.
It was the Excelsior. We discovered that his first posting was aboard Sulu's ship, the Excelsior, during the events of the Undiscovered Country, right?
Oh.
You remember? And Janeway was there in his mind because they'd gone back to discover like there was some telepathic virus that was eating him alive and they had to go back and live through his memories.
Didn't they dust off the a plate that had fallen on the ground as part
no,
of that, you,
no,
as
that
a
was
motif?
On Voyager.
I know, but I mean the reason why it meant something at the end when they were fixing up Voyager was because they had done it in the memories.
No, those were two
that.
Completely different episodes years apart.
No.
And there was no dusting off of any naming plaques on the Excelsior because it didn't get badly damaged at all. It just rode a little bit of the wave from the destruction of Praxis in there, and that was it.
I'm squishing together two episodes, but the rebuilding of Voyager and the dusting off of the nameplate and putting it back in its
You're
place.
You're thinking
meant
of the
something
Equinox.
Of Equinox. That's what I was thinking. E starts with E. Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Number eight.
Mm-hmm.
What is Seven of Nine's full Borg designation, and what is her full human name?
Hey, you can't ask a two-parter. Those are two separate questions. Her full human name is Annika Hansen, and her Borg name is Seven of Nine Adjunct...
Oh, you missed a word already.
What? Unit Seven of Nine Adjunct to Unimatrix 1?
You missed a few details. So it's Seven of Nine Tertiary Adjunct of Unimatrix 01.
Well, I just remembered the one part.
You factored out the zeros, but you missed the tertiary part. That's an important bit of information.
Is it?
Well, you don't want people thinking you're the primary adjunct.
Well, fine then.
And that's it. That's it for the quiz.
That was a good quiz.
A few.
I got like four, I think.
You got 1, 2, 3.5. 3.5 out of 8, because you got her human name.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I'll take it.
And that's it for our show, because there's no shows this week and no more news.
Oh, that was a fun quiz. I want to take it again. I'll do better this time.
Presumably.
Yeah, now that I remember, it's Indiana. I can't believe I screwed that one up. Okay. So if you would like to reach out to the show, we have an email address, mailbag@smartspodcast.com. On Twitter, we are @smartspodcast. On Facebook, it's facebook.com/smartspodcast. And our website is www.smartspodcast.com. How about a funny sound for us?
I can't think of one.
How about Excelsior?
Ooh.